Michelle Biniak, Editorial Director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief Podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are enjoying us, please head over to Apple Podcasts, give us all the stars. This helps other people find us. Today, I am thrilled to be joined by Mark Feldstein and Brad Roth of Stun. Hello, guys. How are you? Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Paige.
Looks like it's been a big 12 months for Stun. Last June, Stun was named Agency of the Year at the Promax BDA Conference in Los Angeles. You are looking to repeat in New York in just a month. You guys moved to a bigger location on Wilshire Boulevard, and it looks like you've expanded your production capabilities and your production interests. So what would you say are sort of Stun's main areas of focus right now?
First of all, thanks for pointing all that out. When you say it all together, it's definitely been an exciting year for us. So, going into our 18th year and having grown now from like four people to 115, it's an exciting time for us. And, you know, taking on the new space, and also we have a soundstage in Culver City right now. For us, it's all about creating new types of content on all platforms. So that's really, you know, as in terms of where our focus is, it's about really cementing ourselves as a premier content studio and moving into just, you know, non-traditional types of content.
When you guys started, you said this is your 18th year. So you started in 2000. At that time, when you started with four people, what was your focus? What did you create Stun to do?
I mean, it was based around the traditional 30-second promo, really. Very much steeped in cable and broadcast. And I don't know if we had a much more grand vision than that. Than just, you know, becoming a best-in-class, you know, agency and commercial production company, and combining those two elements, which at the time was actually somewhat innovative. It's not as much anymore, but it really for us was servicing the, you know, cable and broadcast networks, and we've now at this point in our trajectory. Our business and our client base has just expanded and evolved to be a real dynamic mix of not just entertainment brands, but also consumer brands, not just what we call, you know, traditional 30-second spots, but as Mark pointed out, content and marketing across all platforms and all lengths, really to reach consumers or viewers at any, you know, touch point.
When we started, I'll just add this, that, like, you know, as Brad mentioned, it's like the 30-second TV spot was, that's really what every campaign was based around, that, you know, or maybe there might be like a 15 or something with there, but that's really what it was, the heart of it. And now, I mean, more and more, I mean, you know this better than anyone, Paige, just from all the, you know, all the reporting you do. I mean, it's really, it's about, you know, for us too, it's about the 6-second snap ads, these, you know, the social content, the longer pieces, digital campaigns, you know, out of home. I mean, it's really, it's almost that the weight has completely sort of inverted. And it's not about that 30-second spot, even though that's part of the campaign.
Yeah. Sometimes it's not even included. I mean, besides being adjunct in most cases now, it's certainly often not the cornerstone of a campaign. And it's about how do you reach fans or consumers, and how do you tell the best story in the most compelling way? And then those questions are answered and determined which platform you engage with.
How long would you say that's been the case?
Well, it's been an evolution or a, you know, somewhat of a of a march towards
right.
where we are now, but it was gradual at first, and now you know there was definitely a tipping point. There's no doubt we're past the tipping point. We could say even as early as recently, I should say, as maybe even a year and a half or, you know, ago, it wasn't as advanced to the stage where we are now. Right now, I think we are fully living in a digital marketing world.
Also, do you feel like as that evolution happened, how much of a stretch was it? How much of a challenge was it for you to evolve your skill sets and your staff to be able to keep up and meet that demand? I mean, that demand for that kind of production, for that kind of strategizing, for that
That's
kind of
storytelling.
Question. You know, well, because it's always been about storytelling for us, the platform that it might be on and the length of sort of deliverable that we're creating, you know, it's that's it was easier for us to adjust because it was always about just telling good stories. So, you know, again, the storytelling has to be catered and sort of crafted a bit for depending on what platform you're on. So if we're doing something on Snapchat, the way we're going to, you know, tell that story is going to be different than if we were, you know, on Instagram or YouTube or TV. So again, there are certain elements that you have to be very specific to for that platform. But for us, because it's always been about storytelling and we love doing that, like it was just getting the best storytellers on our team. And we feel we really have that.
And we'll say this, we've never had so many young people, young, talented people in their early to mid 20s in our company, and that is because they are incredibly.
And I we've never felt older.
I was gonna say, yeah.
Yeah, that makes us feel great every day to come to work. But you know, they are true digital natives, and they understand how to tell the story on the platforms Mark just, you know, listed, and so we need to absolutely have them. You know, very much at the fore of what we do. But it does go back again to Mark's point. And I think, you know, to put Mark in good company with Steven Spielberg, who said something at South By that we thought, you know, really resonated with us.
He didn't say this to me, by the way.
No, but I'm gonna put you in this mixed company, Mark. But he said, you know, if you're in the storytelling business, you're in the feelings business. So I think that really just distills it down, is that it doesn't matter what platform, it's about creating that feeling, evoking a feeling, an emotional connection with a viewer, with a consumer, and, you know, and essentially encouraging them to come along on your journey. So in a way, that's a platform agnostic, you know, concept, but you still have to be skilled in terms of customizing a story and optimizing it for the right platform.
I also, one thing I would add too is with regards to the team, because we've been very fortunate, like, you know, we've had clients and partners that have allowed us to just take chances and do some really cool stuff. So we've gotten the opportunity to expand, you know, into all the different, you know, whether we're doing, you know, we're a global creative partner for Snapchat, we're doing Snap Ads, we're doing a Snap Show, or we're doing, you know, Facebook Live, or, you know, all these different fun types of content. We've been able to maintain and to sort of cultivate such a great creative team because we're doing fun, diverse types of projects. And that's really, you know, as a creative, that's paramount. You want to know you're at a place that you get to try new things and do stuff. And we are very fortunate that we have the, you know, the clients and the partners that let us do that. And that lets us sort of bring in, you know, the best people out there that want to be a part of that team. So it sort of then that begets more work. So we're always trying to do different things. We also have very short attention spans over here. So we're looking for that variety. Just selfishly, like, we would go crazy if we did the same thing over and over again. So it's been really fun. Like, for instance, we just, you know, in terms of like where we're focusing on, and, you know, we were talking about just content on different platforms. We have a series right now we're doing, you know, for two series we're doing with Food Network. One as a Snapchat series for Chopped You, which the you know, it's the Snapchat version of Chopped, and we're doing another one on their new OTT play. It's a celebrity interview show in a food truck. Our pilot just got picked up for a new animated comedy series that we're developing with True TV. So it's sort of like there's just such a range of stuff that we're doing in addition to all the marketing that it's a fun time. It's a fun time.
When I look at Stun's work, which I look at quite a lot of, one of the things that really stands out to me, and I've said this to you guys before, is that a lot of it is funny, and it's something that I see consistently from Stun that I don't see nearly as consistently any other place. So what would you say about Stun that allows you to sort of be funny on demand or create these campaigns that are successfully humorous?
Well, first of all, very much appreciate that. And I think what brought Mark and I together back in 2000 or really 1999 when we first met is essentially speaks to what you just brought up about being funny and humor. We both enjoy comedy, so it was something that we had in common, and we both it's a passion for both of us, and it that has sort of, you know, imbued you know, to a large extent a lot of the work we've done over, you know, the last almost two decades. And again, we do work in a lot of genres, obviously, but comedy has just always been a passion It's something that Mark and I, you know, again, have in common. And it actually launched Stun very much with, we did two films. Mark had done one right when we started this with Showtime. And we've done another one together with Showtime that that the network funded these shorts. And then we went to the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen back in the day, if anyone remembers that.
I've been there.
Yeah, and we just had a blast. Those were very great times. And, you know, those were comedy shorts, and then we followed that up with the opportunity work with Jay Roach, who's a legendary comedy director that the folks at Turner connected us with, our wonderful clients there. And we produced another short with him, with Jack Black, the three of us. And then Jay kind of brought us in the fold, and we got to work on Borat and Bruno and other things. And we just have always had a love for comedy, and then subsequently launched Conan when he moved from NBC to TBS. We did a huge campaign for them, you know, with many, many, many spots. Continued to shoot with Conan over the years. We did the launch work for James Corden for his show. We helped launch Samantha Bee. We've shot with Larry David for Curb Your Enthusiasm, and was recognized in Cannes for that. So we've just always had a love for it, and I think that's driven just the body of work that we produce.
And I think in addition to just being like this, just selfishly, we just like comedy. We've, you know, because we've had a chance to work with all the people that Brad mentioned, plus like, you know, Kristen Bell and Andy Samberg and, you know, Rock, and you know, and now just we just work with Michelle Wolf. But we, you know, when we're creating campaigns for a comedy talent, like they're very particular, and they should be, about just who they bring on to sort of capture their voice, because that's their brand. And we've been very fortunate that the writers that we have on our team, you know, we're blessed by our clients to be able to basically capture the authentic voice of these talent. It's a very small club to be in, so we've gotten to work with some pretty amazing people, and the more people you know, more campaigns we do with that type of talent, I think it sort of, you know, you get the reputation of being able to deliver and make them look great and make it funny, and you just, more people come knocking. So it's just we just love doing it, just because you work your ass off, like you might as well laugh.
I feel like comedy, it's a kind of thing that looks easy but is hard. So, and I feel like to be funny but also then to capture the brand voice makes it sort of notches up the difficulty level a few levels. So just in general, I think it's just a thing. It's an art that people don't realize how challenging it is.
Yeah, we agree with you. It is very hard to do well. And I think the difference between comedy and other genres, I think there's less latitude, less margin for error, for not to be funny. If you're not funny and you miss, it is a clear miss. I think maybe in some drama categories or
miss.
Other action. Yeah, it's a
hard
miss.
It's like funny or not
good.
Funny. Yeah.
I think they're a little more forgiving because, you know, you added an extra couple explosions, it worked, or it had some, you know, big production value element. It's, you know, comedy can be extraordinarily simple. But at the end of the day, the litmus test, did it make people laugh? Is it funny? Was it clever? You know, and you know, as Mark said, a hard miss it can be brutal.
It's hard enough to just do good comedy on its own, but like, it's almost counterintuitive. Like when, if you talk to comedians, like they don't necessarily want to sell. You know what I mean? It's about the comedy. So to try to sort of work that messaging, and still try to keep it sort of like authentically funny, or, you know, on brand with their sense of humor, it's tough. So we take a lot of pride in that. And it's just, you know, we got a good team.
One of the campaigns that you guys did, I think in January, was that you mentioned with Kristen Bell. She was hosting the SAG Awards. The spot is really cute.
Next. Hi, I'm Kristen Bell.
Okay, Kirsten. Profile, please. And how tall are you?
I guess like 5'9", I think. Welcome to the 24th Annual SAG Awards.
Can you do it with more of a smile?
Really? Yes, I know how to handle a mic. Also, I'm really good at fast wardrobe changes. Right? It's an open bar at the SAG Awards, right? I'm great with the teleprompter. Next category in the television for outstanding outhouse. I'd be thrilled to be a part of a show that finally celebrates and honors those who have otherwise gone unnoticed. famous actors.
The 24th Annual Screen Actors Guild Awards, hosted by Kristen Bell.
I got the job.
Live Sunday, January 21st at 8, only on TNT and TBS.
I think I said this to you guys at a point. She had to be so game to pull that off. I just wondered how that whole thing came to pass. And I'll post the spot again with this podcast.
Oh, that's terrific. Thank you. Yeah, I think, again, it was a very much a scripted spot, but what it did, and we were very cognizant of this when we worked on it and wrote on it, it was to give Kristen, in a sense, a sandbox to play as well that really leveraged her, you know, all her incredible talents. I mean, she truly is, a triple threat. I mean, she can dance and sing amazingly, and she's funny, and I mean, all at the highest level. So we wanted to create a script that, you know, again, was clearly written and had all, you know, was a true crafted spot. But again, let her bring something to the table and feel comfortable that there was room to play. And I think that's what, along with capturing her voice in terms of her point of view and her own, you know, brand and tone, just, you know, excited her. And we only had her for a very limited amount of time. And that was the other thing. We tried to be incredibly efficient, knowing that a lot of the, you know, top talent, they, you know, their time is, you know, very, very valuable. They're always being pulled in 14 different ways. But she wanted to stick around, and she was amazing and just had a great time with it.
That's key to getting a good spots out of talent like that. Like, you need to give them some flexibility to do what they do. So you want to give them the framework and the script to sort of, they want to know that there's a plan going into this and this is what we're going to shoot. But then letting them, like, always like, oh, I have an idea if I could do this too. Like, it's got to be, especially with someone that's established, and that's probably why they're there in the first place. I think you get the most sort of, it just feels true to who they are if they have some fun with it and they embrace it. And, you know, and we always try to work that into our days, that we can sort of, you know, let them get what we need and have fun with it.
Well, if you think about that spot too, then you're having to capture brand voice of Kristen Bell, of, I think it was TNT, and the SAG Awards. I mean, that's a lot. Mm-hmm. That's a tall order in quick spot.
That's a great point. And not always so, you know, not only because you have three different people to hopefully make feel great, three different clients in a way.
Teams,
But some are also more, you know, could be more conservative than others. One of your sort of folks in that you know, dynamic might want to push things further, and the other one, you know, might say, hey, you know what, we just have a more, you know, safe type of bend. And fortunately, everyone there, you know, the alchemy worked out perfectly, and everyone, you know, felt that they were catered to and got what they wanted out of it. But other times, it can prove to be challenging, even though everyone's ultimate goal is to make the great, you know, the best piece of advertising.
Right. What I would say also is, like, you know, it's like that is important to have someone that will, like, sort of also let you sort of do that. We work with a lot of different clients, and in this particular case, and it's also been a trend for us since we opened our doors. But like the TBS group, TNT, but TBS as a comedy group, they've always wanted to push people and to do something fun and to do something different. So when we were working with Conan, like Brad said, and we did the people, you know, the People of Earth thing with Jay Roach, like, they've always allowed us to sort of have fun, and they've wanted us to sort of go there. And it's finding a partner like that. It's hard to do comedy when you're handcuffed.
Yeah.
So, you know, your work only gets better when you get paired up with someone that actually wants to, you know, do exactly the same thing. So we're very fortunate to have them.
Speaking of being handcuffed, I helped launch a sports network many, many moons ago, and worked for the CEO would always admonish me and say, Bradley, this isn't the comedy network. This isn't the comedy channel. And I think that, you know, given your question, I hear those words just going around in my brain right now, hearing his voice, just, you know, reminding me that it was a sports channel and not a comedy channel.
Yeah, and then you said, I'm going to go start my own thing. Bye.
Exactly. Who knew that was the impetus to all of this, Paige? You're absolutely right. I think that's how it works. Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about, you have a lot of fun with social, I feel. So a couple things come to mind. So when you did the Silicon Valley tease, which was basically just, it was like an image of lag. Essentially, and you ran. I saw it on social, and I saw it. You also ran it on a billboard, which I thought was interesting. And then another example was I believe the one you did for Bravo Imposters, where you could kind of personalize your you know, as a viewer, you sort of ended up being a part of it.
All I'm looking for is a nice, quiet life in a nice, quiet town.
That sounds boring.
Your daughter is a con artist, and unless we find her, her life is in danger.
I don't want this life. What if you went to the police? He killed me.
Ezra Bloom, you're under arrest. Put it down now.
Do not get in the vehicle. Do not put it in gear.
We're going to put together every trick, every scam. We'll take him for everything he's got, like he's done to us.
You're a runner, and I'm a chaser.
Showtime.
See you in a game.
Swift, brutal violence can be effective.
We have a problem. Dangerous.
But can you talk about taking campaigns and producing them specifically for social?
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll just lead with one quick thing about that, and then Mark, maybe pick it up. And that is, you know, a lot of people always want to divide, you know, entertainment brands now into, like, you know, traditional or linear versus streaming or SVOD.
Right.
And I would just say that this is a great example where being innovative and just being, you know, living, like, even traditional networks are very much clearly steeped in social marketing and content. So the line, there really isn't, we don't see it, you know, demarcated or, you know, or categorized that way in terms of, you know, oh, that's a linear network versus that's an SVOD and they do things differently. No, it's all about reaching fans and reaching viewers and doing it in the most effective, you know, and compelling way. So some of the linear networks are doing some of the most interesting things and taking those big swings on social as much as any of the other you know, entertainment brands.
I also think there's, you know, everyone's looking to make that one-to-one connection with viewers and fans. So the, you know, the imposters social interactive video that you mentioned. So that was just so, for people listening, you know, Bravo has a scripted series called Imposters, and what we did is it's about a couple con artists, a group of con artists. So we did a video where we basically shot it looks like a scene from the show with the stars of the series, and they're sitting down and they're basically talking about who their next mark is. And it's a microsite that we created, and basically what happens is when you go to the site, you opt in with your, you know, if you want to go opt in with Facebook or with Instagram, and what it does is it pulls your pictures from your Facebook feed, and so and it identifies like sort of selfies. And so when they're talking about, you know, hey, we found our next mark, and it's you. When you're watching a video, your pictures are in the video, and it's done very seamlessly, and it's a real mind fuck, and it's funny, and you're like, what the fuck? That's me, and that's my friends, and that's my best friend and my wife or whatever it is. So it's a really fun way that connected with fans of the show, and it got shared a lot outside. So people would do it and then share it with, send the link to their friend, and then their friend would try it, and then it would be personalized for that person. So it's a real one-to-one connection that we think, you know, just definitely stood out, and that's where is going.
Yeah. To dovetail that point, Mark, you know, promos are rarely engaged, or, you know, repeatedly, you know, or seen repeatedly. What Bravo loved about this is that, because essentially this was a promo. It was a promo. You were able to insert yourself into the promo, and obviously that was the, you know, the unique hook. But it was being, you know, shared and reshared, you know, sometimes 3-4 times. And like, who has that? Yeah, that's unheard of in terms of that level of engagement with what we would say is a typical, you know, promo. So it was, and everything is about engagement now with fans. So that was really one of the, you know, great pieces of analytics and metrics that came. And then with regards to the HBO campaign, that was just a labor of love. First of all, everyone in our shop loves the series. And we were tasked with, you know, coming with a campaign. Two interesting things. One, we couldn't use the cast from the series this season, which, you know, on some level you could argue is a, you know, oh my gosh, that's an insurmountable challenge. But, you know, out of necessities came some just, you know, awesome creative that we're very proud of. And so we, you know, our team came up with this this never-ending buffering wheel that we're all too familiar with. And that lived as the out-of-home campaign and the billboard campaign, but also that made its way into social because we were able to, you know, actually animate the buffering wheel, and it never ended. So when it ended, when it arrived in your social feed, be it on Instagram or Facebook, people were waiting for this thing to resolve.
Yeah.
And it just got an amazing.
What was really cool about that too is that when it's buff, like even you see this also in the billboards that you walk around, it's like you got to give credit to HBO too that let us. We had the logo for the show was blurry.
Right.
What I mean, it's basically blurry. It's unresolved. It's very hard to see what but you know what it is. And it's like that's like there's no cast and the logo is out of focus, the show name, Silicon Valley.
And the kicker I think there's one more kicker there, Mark, is that it spoke to the narrative arc of the season, which is
right.
For fans who follow, you know, Pied Piper is their future is still unresolved and still sort of undetermined and if you will, blurry in terms of where are they going with with their company and the trajectory of Pied Piper. And so it even underscored, you know, the season's arc. So it was really a special campaign. And as Mark said, great work, starts with amazing clients. And HBO just, you know, they just have an incredible point of view and thoughts. And they let us, go and play. And together we came up with some great stuff.
So here are my two personal experiences with both those campaigns. So on the Imposters one, I was posting it. So I go through the process of, okay, what is this? I do it on Facebook. And then I don't love, especially if I'm posting on Brief, I don't want my own pictures on there. So then when it you realize, oh, I'm in this, I was like, I'm not posting these pictures on here. So I had to kind of work my way around that to post the campaign. But then on the Silicon Valley one, and I think this is the genius of it, is I took, I'm sure it takes people a varying period of time to figure out what is actually going on here. Because just like everyone else, I was sitting there waiting for it to resolve. And then I realized this is the joke. But while you're waiting for it to resolve, you're thinking about Silicon Valley for however long it takes you to figure it out. So it's like you get that extra engagement just while people, sit and stare at it for a second. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, I'm glad you had good experiences.
What if they were good, but no.
and we should say on the first one, because I think you're probably not alone that people, because a lot of people would post this, but you have the option. We also give everyone the option at the end to customize the photos chosen. So you may like two of the four, and one of them is you in a towel getting out of like the hot tub, and you're like, I don't really want to put that publicly. You can swap the shot.
I did see that you can swap the shot, yes.
Yeah.
Do you feel like producing for social is a lot different than producing for TV, or does it more just give you a lot more latitude and a lot more opportunity for engagement?
Well, it's definitely different. I mean, there's no question about it. You have to be able to, not every story can just simply be dropped into any platform and, obviously. And to do it really well and to really create just to nudge, and engage, viewer behavior, it really does have to be optimized and customized for a platform. And that means not just obviously shooting vertical video makes sense, but it's like, how is that story told in a, in a very clear, efficient, and in a way that actually does evoke some sort of emotional response, and that is, can be certainly challenging, especially in a truncated period of time. If you're doing, for example, a 6-second snap ad, our chopped episodes also on the snap plan, where those were 5 minutes, but we had to take the chopped format. It wasn't just simply, hey guys, let's just do a shorter version and shoot it vertically. It was, how do we take the format of chopped and make it work and collapse it or compress it and really make it be efficient for that platform? And I think you need to be expert and really hone your craft and skills in terms of knowing what is going to be effective on the platform. And quite often we're asked to work sometimes even on site and embed with our client.
It's such a drag.
Yeah, that's a whole
nother
story. Yeah.
Yeah.
To help guide and just educate our clients in a way that can make sure they can attract maybe brand partners or, you know, or more viewers or higher engagement, but our team is very, very good and very expert. So we not only literally work out of our own offices, but we also often are boots on the ground in partnership with clients to help them be expert on the various social platforms.
One thing I like, and I don't know if this is just like a psychological thing that happens, but it feels like when we're doing spots for social, the client that we're working with, if we're doing, say, something for TV and then something for social, when we're doing something for social, they're less emphatic about needing to put in as much sort of salesness into it,
mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I think it's about more about the storytelling and having fun with the platform. Whereas when you're doing more of a traditional spot, a lot of times there's a little bit of pressure that, you know, you got to put all the everything else in there, which is understandable. But like when it's a shorter format, you can't. You got to get people's attention. You got to do something interesting. You got to get that main message across, of course. But it's less about sort of trying to, you know, a lot of times we've all had to try to pack a lot of stuff into a spot. And I think there's a little more leeway when you're doing social, you know, spot, you know, content on social. Not always.
Yeah, and it's that whole thing also sort of authenticity versus something that's more produced. You know, there's all these, you know, various elements that factor in to how, you know, how you tell that story per the specific platform. And, you know, some of it is as simple as, you know, basic blocking and tackling, where a brand's logo may live, you know, within the spot in terms of the timeline, sort of low-hanging fruit, things like that. But then also, it's very much at its core, you know, how do we articulate the story or the quintessence of this brand's promise in a sometimes very short period of time or in a format that may have other, you know, unique elements or restrictions.
I think the other thing, this was true definitely with the imposter spot, is, and I think anybody would want this, but it's hard to guarantee, which is that engagement and the fact that that campaign was innately shareable. I mean, the way it was conceived, I can see where you could feel this will guarantee sharing, but I do feel like that's a hard thing to commit to. You know what I mean? It's like saying, I'm going to deliver to a viral video. You just don't really know. So I think it's a thing that you have to go after. I just don't know how, in terms of working with a client, how you make those kinds of promises or...
Well, that's a great point. And I think the promise is, and again, everybody certainly wants to know the metrics and see, you know, and see all the, you know, conversion and reach and all the things that are obviously critical to marketers. But we give Bravo an enormous amount of credit for this. And same even like the HBO example with Silicon, it's about the fans for them. If they feel it's going to be a great fan experience and reaction, or that is really their litmus test. And in our opinion, the best clients, that's sort of the bar. Rather than everything being about absolute measurement in data and analytics, it has to be. It's a visceral relationship. It's that one-to-one relationship that Mark was talking about. It's so, you know, sometimes elusive. If you're thinking it through the lens of what would the fans like, our fans like, the show's fans like, that should be your driver in terms of determining, is this something we put some dollars behind and take a swing at versus, you know, hey, guys, let's just, you know, start checking on, the, you know, on all the, you know, analytics and what's this going to get and so forth. You can't, you know, on some level they're inextricably linked, but it has to be calibrated if you're going to be successful towards fulfilling your fans' desires.
And I think it's also like you were saying, you know, people are saying, like, oh, make it a viral video. I mean, back probably like five, six years ago, that was sort of the term. Like, it was almost like the way if someone said they wanted to do something, you know, on digital or social, like it was, they would say, oh, I want a viral video. That was just the term that you used. And I don't think people really thought, like, you know, it was like, oh, yeah, of course it'll be viral, because all you had to do back then is someone got hit in the groin and like it would be funny and people would share it. Now it still works.
Timeless,
still
classic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my go-to. But for now, I think one of the things that makes it shareable is innovation. So that's what's sort of, you know, there's all these new platforms that are coming out and new technologies that are, you know, tech that's being available on existing platforms. And if you can, like what we did with Imposters, if you can do something compelling and fun that speaks to fans and do it in a way that they haven't seen it before, that also ups the chances that your thing's going to be shared, because, you know, everything gets done. If it's like, oh, it's another funny video, it's like, that's great, but that's not enough. now. You have to sort of be innovative, and you have to really sort of be first to market whenever
and
possible.
Innovation can mean sometimes, even though a lot of coding went into that we did, but innovation can also mean using existing, you know, tech that's out there or code, you know, so that wasn't necessarily proprietary in terms of being able to, you know, grab, I guess the term is scrape photos from people's stream, but it was something that existed, but it was used in a different way, you know, by using it within creating a real scene from the, you know, a scene from the show. So it can be, you know, you can do interesting and innovative things, even given what's currently out in the ecosystem and the marketplace, but it just takes, you know, it takes a lot of thought. And again, that goes back to, if we can tout ourselves first, or at least our company Stunt, is that one of our competitive advantages we've always felt has been in that group of 115 people, almost all are creatives. We're like one person in finance. That's everyone else is a creative.
That
poor guy. So what we were able to do is, and they come from all different disciplines, you know, whether they're designers or illustrators, copywriters, creative directors, some who are very visual, and some folks who are, you know, are really, you know, expert at comedy, whatever it might be, we're able to bring all that multidisciplined talent and point of view to bear, you know, against a project and come at an idea from a lot of different ways and see what sort of buoys to the top.
Another actual example of that where you put the viewer into the action is this one I don't think was very widespread. I think it was the activation at Comic-Con for People of Earth. So in that, you would, on the floor of the Comic-Con floor, you could go and be in a virtual reality video, and then you would have things happen to you as if you were in the show, and then you would get a little video of it afterwards, which was also a very creative use of all this tech. I don't think it's something you can do super broad scale, but it was interesting and innovative and along the lines of what you're talking about.
No, thank you for that. Yeah, I mean, you know, we were, first of all, very proud that the Hollywood Reporter called that activation one of the top five at Comic-Con, which was exciting for us and for the folks at TBS. And like you said, again, it goes back to the fan. Again, interestingly, also, it was one of the, I think, first, or maybe not the only, but VR 4D experiences that was based in comedy. Usually it was always, these VR experiences are very much around, you know, stuff that's very, you know, visual and, you know, and the cosmos or, you know, or explosion. But this was to do a comedy VR experience was truly, again, unique and innovative, if we can. And it was a great experience for fans and a talk about, and we added the extra element of beyond the fan to be able to sort of look around the spaceship and hear the aliens. We added the 4D element of them being able to, you know, feel that they were sanitized or not probed, but
sprayed,
you know,
when you're in the chair. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it was cool. All right. So
thank you.
We're sort of running short on time, but I wanted to talk about one more topic. It was the Hulu New Front. They just concluded in New York. Is that something that you guys have done a bit of, or how familiar are you with the whole New Front Upfront process?
Yeah, we're very familiar. We've had the good fortune of working and being tapped by Hulu to work on their New Front for the last 3 years. Each one gets more spectacular and more ambitious than the next, which is, again, to their credit, just wanting to always move the needle. And this year, I think, Mark, we started maybe back in November. That's how long a lead we had with a very deep team.
It's been a very big team on this thing, you know, working very, very, very closely with the Hulu team. And, you know, for this one, you know, we sort of really, you know, we created the visual theory and we implemented the design, and we, you know, they came to us and we created, directed like the entire experience. And it was just like really sort of hand in hand with Hulu. They've been such great partners, and it's an awesome thing. We like 150 foot screens. It was almost 8K, 10K file sizes. I mean, this thing was like a massive undertaking, and couldn't be more proud or excited with how it all turned out. I mean, it was a big one.
Run me through quickly what all went on at the New Front.
Well, it started with the lobby experience. So we were, you know, basically when you go in the first interaction that sort of the New Front goers experienced, there was like a, you know, we had a 12 12-minute loopable piece that we did in the lobby and all the design
and
in there.
Hulu something at Madison Square Garden, Hulu Theater.
Madison Square Garden, the new Hulu Theater.
Right.
Anytime you do anything at Madison Square Garden, you get a sense of how epic it really was. And now, you know, Hulu, it's now the Hulu Theater, as you said, and that is truly special, and they really know how to bring that theater to life.
And was there, just for people's clarification, another name for a Hulu new front goer is media buyer or advertiser. That was a joke. Ha ha ha.
Did you put a laugh track in there?
Yeah, I'm doing my own laugh track in there. Was there a performance at the Hulu New Front too?
There was a mix of there's a live component and taped component with all that.
Okay. I mean, it's just interesting how, again, back in the day, everything's changed so much, but back in the day, you had 1 week of upfronts. It was basically broadcast networks and it was exhausting, but it was 1 week. But now it's like 3 months of this and everybody is constantly upping the ante.
Yes. No, and you know, it's interesting too, when it comes to new fronts, one thing that, you know, compared, you know, new fronts to some more traditional, you know, like the television upfronts, which we've been involved with, you know, just across the board and been very fortunate with that. But in recent years, I mean, you really see that there are some players like Hulu and others of these sort of more of the new media and streaming that have, like, the new front event is sort of gotten on that scale that used to be sort of reserved for more of the traditional, you know, networks. And in some cases, traditional networks are sort of are getting smaller, but they've upped their game, and because they know, like, this is, you know, again, they're in it as much as anybody. I mean, it's not, you know, there's no delineation, and in terms of what sort of separates the work that we would do for those, it's really about just what the story is for that brand, for that media company. It's not whether it's a new front or an upfront. It really comes down to what that specific story is for that brand.
Do you guys, if you're doing like the Hulu New Front, it sounds like that was a pretty specific presentation, like A to Z presentation you were creating. But a lot of times upfront work is like networks are going through pilots and they're shooting pilots and they're making decisions. So you're doing a lot of cutting and recutting and competing against other agencies. But when you were doing the Hulu New Front, it doesn't sound like that was your process. Are you still in that other process too?
Very different for this case. Like what Hulu wanted, what's pretty cool about unique with what they did together. We worked with them. We came up with a belief system behind the entire presentation. There was a story behind everything. So it wasn't just sort of a collection of these are some of the series that are coming up, which can be great too. It's just a different way of doing it. But they were very specific. They wanted a belief system behind the entire presentation.
Right. So that is a lot different.
Very much. It's really about, you know, the experience, also speaking to the experience of people, you know, who watch on Hulu. That was very much part of it as well. And that is also part of a delineation because it's a little more interactive, obviously, than maybe just a traditional, you know, linear network where, you know, you just sort of lean back and you have your remote control.
All right. So we're getting to the end. Last question is there anything you can mention that you've got kind of coming up that you think is especially cool?
I would say the Joe Coy series for True TV is something I think that we're very excited about. And as Mark, I think, mentioned at the outset, you know, it literally just got announced today on Deadline about 2 hours ago, which we're super excited about. And for those folks who don't know Joe Coy, he's just an unbelievably funny comedian. He's had a couple Netflix specials. And we, you know, with Joe came up with this idea of creating essentially a blended Family Guy, a family experience that really is representative of the times. And Joe it's going to be based on his actual life and comedy. And he's Filipino and has a Filipino mom and has a very mixed and kind of messy family. And it's just all the humor and heart, if you will, that comes from that. And to be in the True TV upfront for a series that, you know, we are creating with our, you know, with Joe, and we're just super excited about that. I think that speaks also to Stun and our sort of future in terms of as a content studio.
And that show's animated, right?
Yeah, animated. Yeah. It's a half-hour animated comedy series. So we're, you know, in development with them.
Okay.
Yeah, and it really draws on Joe's real life experiences and sort of populated by characters, you know, in his life, and it's going to be tweaked, of course, and you know. Joe's just basically trying to get through the day. That's all of us.
He's just trying to get to lunch.
So that's the log line.
I think that's what Mark's trying to do. So that's a good place to wrap it up, actually. All right, you guys. Well, everyone, check out Joe Coy on True TV, Joe Coy Show. I'll try to link to that too on the
Great. Right, we'll send you the link to that.
Right now, it's in development. It's in development, so you can't watch it yet. Hopefully
nobody go watch that yet, then.
Imagine it. Imagine how great it is.
We'll send the pilot around.
All right. All right, you guys. Well, thank you both so much. It was great chatting with
you.
And we'll see you in New York in a month.
Yep.
Yes, very excited to be there. And thank you again for inviting us on the show.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. Kareem Taylor produced this episode. Video helper provided the music. Digital producer Kate Lekier-Marion contributes to Daily Brief. Follow Promax BDA on Twitter, Facebook, and other social media platforms at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org, and you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.